Good morning and welcome to this hour together as women. And the subject we're looking at this morning is hymn making as a ministry. A number of years ago, I attended a woman's seminar in our area, and the speaker, a blind lady, told us about the platform that God had given her from which to speak to thousands of people, telling them about Jesus. And her blindness, her handicap, was her platform. Her testimony was clearly one of exalting Jesus, and we were all pulled in to who this God is that was able to give this lady a place in which to talk about Jesus. The next day at Sunday school, during that hour in Sunday school, one of the ladies in the group, one of us, a full-time married homemaker, was bemoaning the fact of trying to figure out, so where is her platform? What is her platform? Does she even have a platform? And I sat there feeling what she was feeling. You know, so our world as a homemaker seems so narrow, so small. Four walls encase us. So what is our platform? Do we even have one? Do we even have an opportunity to use our voice? Our voice might be heard by one of us, might be heard by two of us, might be heard by 10 of us. Home has always been a part of my existence. What a gift. But it wasn't until the last number of years that I began to fully understand what impact a home has on an individual life. You know, before, home was just one of those realities. Everybody needs it. It just goes. And so it's kind of like something's happening with each one of you right now that you're not even thinking about. But it's so important that if it would stop, you would cease to exist. Have you thought about your heart beating this morning? I thought about it. It's slowing down a little bit now. But it's such a vital thing. And I want to suggest that home is exactly like that for each one of us. It is so vital in our role and in our lives. And we have this wonderful opportunity as women, because God called us to this role, to give it our best, to give it the energy that it needs. And I think, well, why is home so important? What did God have in mind when he created home? And as I thought about that, I had to go back to creation. When God worked at creating the world, and I thought about it as I was sitting down there listening to Stephen up front, I'm thinking, okay, I could just pick up where he left off at times, because you have all the background already. But I'll just repeat it for us, for your sake, and mine, for that matter. And God created the world. And he says, the story starts in Genesis, and through the first 11 chapters of Genesis, it's a struggle of man trying to grasp or to even fill the earth with his glory. Man's doing a good job of filling the earth. But Psalm 72:19 says, praise be to his glorious name forever. May the whole earth be filled with his glory. God wants the earth to be filled with his glory, and the only way that it's going to be filled with his glory if people love God and see him as the creator of the world. God's intent is to have the earth, the place that he created, full of his glory. He gave instructions to the group of people, since man struggled to get this concept of filling the earth with his glory. He created a people, grew a people, a nation. And one of the first commandments he gave them once they got to out of Egypt into a land of their own, or on their way to being in a land of their own, he said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul. And Jesus confirms this commandment in the New Testament, when he tells us that the first and foremost thing that is important in our life, in your life, is to love the Lord your God. Have you heard that before? God wants us to be lovers of Him. He wants the whole world to be lovers of Him. This love needs to be nurtured. And when you think of the word nurture, what place is associated with nurturing? The home. God Himself even chose a home to grow His Son, to love His Son, to grow Him in stature. So the primary place of nurturing is the home. And God has given you and I that nurturing heart, that duty of being homemakers. Wow! That's exciting. That thrills me. And when I realize that my home can be my platform from which to proclaim the love of Jesus, to nurture the love of Jesus within my own heart, because I need a home, just like my family needs a home. To create nurture, or to nurture love in the heart of my children, to create a place that nurture for love for God in my husband. What a platform. What a ministry. Susan McCauley, in her book, For the Family's Sake, says it this way: if the home is not adequate, they, the children, and I would add myself as well, are deprived of the opportunity to develop as God intended. If the home is not adequate, we are deprived of the opportunity to develop as God intended. So the goal, the vision then of the home is to nurture love for God. That should be at the center. On your handout, you see four pictures, and in the center is that little hub. What I want in there is love for God. And the home's primary purpose is to nurture a love for God. And I just want to note right here that home is too broad of a subject to talk about it for just the married homemaker. There are single homemakers whose responsibility is creating a home for herself in which the same purpose is to nurture love for God in herself. It will look different than you and I. So the single homemakers in our churches, please let us not neglect them. Let us not look at them as another or somebody different than us. We are homemakers together. And energy is the focus is the same. The amount of energy we give to home will be different. Because they, dear ladies, also have to make a living for themselves. We do well in to consider them and in encouraging them in their role as a homemaker as well. So in our talk today, what I want to do is flesh out this work of nurturing love for God as we consider the four primary functions of a home. Pictures of how our homes can make a difference. Pictures of how our homes can be a platform of service. And pictures of home as service, as ministry. So these four pictures are seen through four functions: a place to belong, a place to grow, a place to learn, and a place to share. And all of these working towards that goal of nurturing love for God. So what are those functions? The first function is suggested by the word household. When I started working on this subject a number of years ago, I went to scripture saying, okay, what does God have to say about home? And it was hard to find, you know, there's not one particular passage or three particular passages or a whole book concentrated to here's what the home does, here's what you should do in the home. But as I observed scripture, as I read scripture, there were some things that popped out. And the first function is suggested by the word household. Scripture uses this word to refer to house. Achan and his household were to be stoned. The Philippian jailer and his household believed. This word speaks of belonging. Home is a place to belong. There's a deep desire within each of us to belong. And when we have a place to belong, it gives us identity, providing us with emotional rest. Even if a home is not a safe place, our identity still feels a connection with home, giving us a sense of being a place we belong. And I was appalled when I read the book A Man Named Dave and how that child in that home, Dave, was badly abused by his mother, thrown down the steps, denied food, given little rations of food, and yet there's other children in that home and she catered to them, she enjoyed them, she loved them, but for some reason this little child she did not appreciate at all and demonstrated that in a variety of ways that she gave, she related to him. But I was appalled at the fact that when he left home, he had this longing to go back. And I was like, why? Why would you want to go back? But it was a place they belonged. And so it became real to me that it doesn't take much to make home a place to belong, but it takes work to make it a safe place to belong. And that's our work, to nurture love for God in making our homes a safe place to belong, a place where we can curl up with a blanket and a book on occasion, a place where we can feel at rest. Now you're all looking at me thinking, that's not always the reality at our home. You're right, that isn't. But, read in the Laurel Ingalls Wilder's book, there's one little thing that happens every time they move to another place. Do you know what that is?
The shepherdess.
Yeah, the shepherdess. It appears in every one of the books, basically. And so, it's something that when she saw that, Laura, the child, saw that, she says, home. And when you decorate your home's not going to look like your sister's home or your sister in the church's home, because that's not them. Your home is going to look like you or your family you share your home with. In our home, since I'm married, we have bookshelves around the fireplace in the middle. And my vision of those bookshelves was some pictures and some plants and, those kind of things. But when I'm talking to Stephen, his idea is, okay, these are all books and these are all books. And I thought, there's two of us here that we need to work at making this a home. And so some of them had plants and pictures in, and some of them had books in. So we work at it together. By a safe place to belong, I mean a picture that is kind of like a castle with a wall around, a place of refuge. And I have three things that I like to think about by safe. A place of order. There's routines in place. There's disciplines in place. There's rhythm. There's obedience. Respect. These are words of order. It is our job as homemakers to manage the routines, the disciplines. Married homemakers, we share in developing those routines with our husbands, but then it's our job to keep them going, carry them out on a daily basis. A single homemaker develops the routines herself, and it is needful for her as a homemaker, and it is as needful for her as a homemaker of a family, the routine, the structure of a home. Developing daily rhythms of when we go to bed, when we get up, when we eat, gives our body rest. When we alleviate from this rhythm, we are more tired. Vacation. Get it? When you go on vacation, you get home and you're, why? You just took a vacation. Well, because you alleviated from the routine, the structure. And it's disruptive. That doesn't mean you should never go on vacation, but this is just kind of giving you an idea why we are tired when we get home from vacation. When I go shopping for a day, I have to travel a distance to go shopping. And when I get home, I'm just so whooped. And part of the problem is because when it's noontime, I still got shopping to do. And so I don't sit down and take dinner. And then I've alleviated from a routine. And that's wearing. What gets us through a trauma situation? Keeping in with the routine. As hard as it is, but keeping up with the routine of rhythm provides life-giving to us, is life-giving to us, provides a structure. And this is just important for a single who is running a home as a multi-person home, as a married woman for a multi-person home. No routine, no rhythm, respect for your body, or you're more valuable to burnout. A number of the single staff at our place there, Faith Builders, have gotten to the place of burnout because, okay, nobody's expecting them for supper at 5 o'clock, it's just them. So maybe tonight's supper could be at 7, maybe tomorrow night at 9, maybe at another night. But keeping a rhythm, a routine, the discipline, our life-giving, and less stressful on our bodies. And it's just as important for them. So if you have single homemakers in your church, keep them accountability to their structure, to their discipline, their rhythms. They will change from time to time. When your children are little, there's one kind of rhythm. When they get a little older, there's another kind of rhythm, and so they will change. When my children were teenagers and going off to work, you know, my morning routine of my time with the Lord had to be different because some of my boys left at 5:30 in the morning for a construction crew. Well, I wasn't really wanting to get up at 4:30 to do that, but if I get them up and get them breakfast and the lunch packed and out the door at 5:30, then at 6 o'clock I could have my devotion time. So things change. There's seasons of life. So a place of order. But our homes also are a safe place of belong as we think of a place of light, a place that embraces gratefulness, appreciation, blessings, enjoyment. These need to be cultivated in me as well as in my children. So I teach my children, thank you. When we were first married, Stephen must have grown up in a home where thank you was a normal word. And because I would do something for, he would do something for me, and then he'd wait just a little bit, then he'd go, thank you. Well, I was taught to say thank you too, but for a Christmas present or a, you know, but this normal thing. But it was just a good help for me to learn to say thank you. Those are the kinds of things where I found it very easy to call myself stupid for a mistake I made. Those words should not be in my mouth. Those words should not be tolerated by myself or even anyone else in the family. I'm sloppy homemaker. I just can't do anything right. Those are not life-giving words. Light, making our homes a place of light. Ridicule, abuse, favoritism are not making our homes a safe place to belong. They are not a place of light. And we see that worked out in Isaac and Rebecca. Favoritism, Jacob, ridicule, Joseph's brothers. Those things are not making our place a safe place to belong. So a place of order, a place of light, and a place of cleanliness. Now this is the one I dislike the most. I'm not a cleaner. I don't like to clean. And it's a mundane task. But it is a place that, it is a work that makes our homes safe places to belong. If we let the dirt pile up, there could be spider bites on our children or ourselves. Okay, sometimes we have to work harder. When we were in South Carolina, we had to work hard against, and I can't even think what they are right now, roaches. You know, and I always felt like, boy, if I had roaches, my place was terrible. But it was just a normal thing. But to work hard at keeping them at bay. And I'm not talking about every time we have company, we have to wash the walls down and scrub the windows and make sure the fingerprints are off the windows. If I would do that, I'd never have company because my grandchildren love to touch my windows when they come to knock on the door. Just as much as my children did. But it's okay. There's life there. And that's a great thing if everything is always picked up. I'm not talking about that kind of reality, but I'm talking about doing the duty of cleaning, keeping our houses clean to promote health, to promote rest, making our homes a safe place to belong. For us with small children, this is going to demand a lot of our time. For others of us, this is going to be less. Right now, we are empty nesters as of July 3rd. Our youngest child just got married, and I'm thinking, well, even when she was the only one at home for a couple of years, I didn't spend nearly as much time cleaning as when I had an 18-month-old and a set of twins all at the same time. My work seemed to never cease as far as the cleanup part. I say these three things, but I also want you to hear that this doesn't make the a home where there is no trouble. We had a son who struggled with wetting his bed. And he was young enough, it didn't bother me, and then as he got a little older, it bothered me some more, and I've always heard that if there's bed wetters, there's unrest in his spirit or something like that, and there's, so I was like, okay, what are we doing here that's wrong, and why aren't the, you know, the rest of the children aren't wetting their beds, so what's wrong with this child? And so we tried all kinds of things. We took him to a doctor, we've used a little wet alarm that as soon as there was dampness, it would go off. Well, it didn't wake him up, it woke me up. We tried setting the alarm to get him up at night to take him to the bathroom. He didn't wake up, I did. I struggled to get him to wake up. He doesn't even remember going to the bathroom. We tried no dairy products after supper, that didn't help. We tried no liquids after supper, that didn't help. We tried chiropractic, and we went several times, and that didn't help. And so finally the doctor told us, or the chiropractor said, you might as well not come back. And anyway, but the point that I want to make here is this mother did not do well with this situation. She would become very frustrated at times, and even anger expressed, and just like, what in the world is wrong with you? Why can't you get up out of bed? And anyway, I'd have to apologize over and over again, but we've even got to the point where we have him wash his own sheets and put them back on, thinking that if he did that, he would get the point that this has to stop. Anyway, when he was 15, his dad asked the family one time at Christmas, the beginning of a new year, saying, what are some of your goals for this year? And we hadn't really talked about the bedwetting issue as a family up to this point. We all knew it. Everybody knew it. He shared his room with a brother, and that brother never complained about it. I was just totally amazed. He did better with it than the child's mother. Anyway, this son who struggled with this told the family, he said, I hope that I don't wet my bed. And I just sat there, dumbfounded. It was like, wow, he had courage. This was a safe place for him to state that goal. And I was so blessed. I thought, God, you've heard all my cries and my frustrations and all that, and yet this child was willing to say that. What a gift. It wasn't until, he didn't manage that goal that year. It wasn't until he was 16 when he finally conquered that problem. So I'm not saying that our home being a safe place to belong erases all the struggle. But we do our part to make it a place where struggle is okay. And it's a safe place to grow. It's a safe place. Making our homes a safe place for us to belong and others requires a lot of hard work, and it requires the strength and energy of Jesus more than any other probably function of the home. I need his strength every single solitary day to be faithful in this work. It's very important that we take seriously our responsibility here, because when I know that home is a safe place to belong as a person, when my child knows that home is a safe place to belong as a person, it helps me then to understand what it means to belong to Jesus. Jesus is a safe person to belong to. And children who don't have home as a safe place to belong to have a harder time grasping that truth that Christ is safe. And so what a ministry we have making our homes a safe place so that our children can more easily grasp the reality that Christ is safe. So that's the first function of the home, our homes being a safe place to belong. The second function is found in 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So I want to say that home is a place to grow, where our physical needs are met. But what would it be like if we would do this task as God does this task? I was picking blackberries with Yvonne just the other night, and they're just all over the place, and there were places where we couldn't reach, we couldn't get to them, and we wanted to get to them. And I just made the comment, wow, how generous God is. Because who's going to get those blackberries? What's going to happen to those blackberries? I have a mother-in-law who just thinks that if you don't use every single solitary one, you're being useful. And I think of all the apple trees that are gone, you know, the apples fall to the ground in our area, but nobody gets because they're back in the woods that nobody even sees. God is generous. So what does it mean for us to be generous? What about planting a plant in a beautiful flower pot? We could just put it in an old plastic container and it would grow just fine. But we add richness to that plant when we put it in a beautiful flower pot. So I want to call us to making our home a rich place to grow. And I'm not talking financial. I'm not talking about spending all the money and being elaborate in that way. But I'm talking about, instead of putting the milk jug on the table, why not dumping the milk into a beautiful picture and putting that on the table? That adds just a touch of richness. Now, it's okay to put the jug of milk on the table. I do that too. But what about doing those types of things as a place of making our homes a rich place to grow? By rich, I mean giving beyond duty. That's how God gives to us. He gives beyond what we even deserve. Giving beyond duty, taking the time to do something with the black beans rather than just opening up the can and taking a spoon inside and saying, here, eat this. We could eat it like that. But I had to think of several different people that give us snapshots of this type of rich giving beyond duty. I have a sister-in-law who is a seamstress through and through. She just loves to sew. Well, guess what? The Lord gave her 5 boys. She loved those boys. She loved those boys. And she used her enjoyment of sewing to create baseball applique patches on their knees of their pants. She made them all look alike shirts that ever all the other boys admired and wished for. So she used her enjoyment of sewing, what she enjoys doing, by giving to her sons in a way that none of the rest of us really did. I have a sister who, at a family get-together one November, we were together over the time of one of my other sister's anniversary. And so she thought that we could just do a good celebration of this anniversary by having this really special meal, just added a few extra touches to it. And my personality is, well, if I can't do it for the one sister, I won't do it for the next, because I treat everybody fairly. So she's thinking about this celebration, and I'm thinking, well, she didn't ever do it for me. So why should we do it for this person? And if she's with at somebody's place on their child's birthday, she'll give that child a present, where she didn't give any of my children a present. And so I'm working hard through trying to make sense of this. And I hear God say, Cynthia, this sister loves to celebrate. And if she was at your place on your anniversary, guess what? She celebrates you. So enjoy this piece of who your sister is. And celebrate with her. Get in the party and celebrate. And enjoy this aspect, this richness that she's giving beyond duty. She could have just made a meal. But she gave some simple touches or some extra touches to it. Some paper supplies that she picked up at a Dollar Tree to add to the idea of this party. I have a friend, a single friend, who often sits up to her table in the evening, brightened with a candle and a very colorful, balanced meal. And in fact, she'll even set the table before she goes to work so that when she comes home, she'll open the door and there's the table already set for her. What an invitation to come, welcome home. She's going beyond duty for herself. I have another friend who is an organizer of chores. I am not an administrator. I had a hard time with this with my children, of calling them to duty. I have a daughter who does a much better job of that than I did, and even when we were away, she would get work out of some of the younger children that I never could get out of them. And it's because she was kind of an administrator, but I have this heart of mercy that gets me in trouble. And I'm a doer, so I would actually just end up doing it. So I have this friend who just does extremely well with organizing chores. And she would make this list for her boys, and she only had four boys. And she would make this list, and she would say, here's your assignment, go for it. And I had to go to her and say, boy, I like that list, can you help me do that? And if she would house clean a room, she would paste on the wall in the room, or not paste, but tape on the wall in the room, all the chores that need to be done in that room before they left the room. She was just an organizer, somebody that I had a lot to learn from, and it was just very helpful. But these ladies used the gifts that they had in their home to make it a rich place to grow. Each one of these homemakers, by excelling in using their interests, their gifts, are cultivating a rich soil in which to grow and thrive personally and for others. We're not all thrilled to be in the kitchen where we get to spend a lot of time. I feel for those ladies who don't like the kitchen as much. Or we're not all thrilled to sit at a sewing machine or to clean house. We each have our strengths. But we need to give each other space for their strengths and encourage each other in them. Work against comparisons or bad-mouthing ourselves. I had a sister that just recently WhatsApped a picture of her out in the field on a hay field baling, and she said, I'd rather be doing this than cleaning. And I thought, yeah, I agree with you. But I also knew that I had one sister that would say, oh, I'd rather be cleaning. And sure enough, she said that very thing. Traditions help us make our homes rich places to grow. And one of the traditions that was very common in our home, in my home, was my mom would throw a 16th birthday party. And when I turned 16, I was out in the barn milking cows. I grew up on a farm. And this was 2 days after my actual birthday. And I played right into their hands. I had no idea anything was going on. And I went out, so they had all the time and energy to give to setting up this party. And then I came in, still not aware of anything, and decided to, and I didn't always change out of my barn clothes, or we didn't always, but I decided to change out of my barn clothes. And later that evening, in the lane comes a tractor and a wagon full of my friends. And my mom had ordered a birthday cake from my cousin, who was a cake decorator, and they came down from Lancaster, which was an hour away. And anyway, we had this bang up birthday party for me. My mom didn't have to do that, but she made home a rich place to grow by establishing this tradition for us as a family. Experiencing this as a person helped me to understand God's abundant provision for me. God is not just about providing our basic needs, but He throws so much more our way. His presence, His steadfast love, the knowledge and skill to create black bean soup rather than just opening a can of black beans. We as homemakers get to exemplify this piece of God's character as we do the duty, the daily task of providing not for ourselves only, but also for others under our roof. Or I shouldn't say, not just for everybody else under the roof, but us too. How can we do this as a piece of who God is? Another picture of home is talked about in Deuteronomy 6:9, and you've already heard this verse several times if you've been here first thing in the morning. And you shall write them, commands of God, in verse 4 and 5, upon the posts of thy house and on the gates, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. So home is a place to learn, a primary place to grow our understanding of who God is, to teach the Bible stories, to tell the Bible stories, to teach about who God is. Learning is so much a part of our everyday life. We never get too old to learn. There are many things vying for our attention these days. Have we bought into the world of needing to be entertained? The lure of motion is captivating, while at the same time dulling our imagination in ways that kill creativity. If we're going to do well with learning, our homes should be fascinating places in which to learn. One of the things that I have done in our home is feed the birds. And occasionally I think, oh, I should quit spending the money on bird feed and suet and all those wonderful other things, grape jelly. But often we'll sit at the table and say, oh, look what's at the feeder. And each year we often get a new bird. And the recent new bird that we got was the pileated woodpecker, huge bird. Come to the feeder. And it's been so much fun. And when guests come, they sit there and they observe the birds. And I realized that this is a place where we can worship God by seeing all the different colors. We look forward to the orioles in the springtime. We look forward to the seeing the different nuthatches, the different woodpeckers. So it is a fun opportunity. I did stop all the bird feeders to go on this trip because we also have another visitor who likes to visit our bird feeders, and that is the big black bear. He likes to climb up on our deck and get after our bird feeders, so if the bird feeders are destroyed in the morning, we know we've had a visitor during the night. It's not very often, but it does happen at our home. Making our homes a fascinating place to work or to learn. This takes work. It might even require sacrifice, especially when we have little children. It takes time to sit on the floor and play Lego rather than just pop in a video for them to sit and observe. But we kill something in them when we do that. We build something in them when we take time for them. And by the way, it really needs to be a part of our job list for the day because it is our work. We're growing children. So fascinating means we are doing all we can to encourage right learning. We ask the questions. So why do you think the sun came up this morning? What if it didn't come up? What happens to gelatin or sugar if I put it in hot water? Would the same thing happen if I put corn in hot water? Why does God allow evil on the earth? Why did God allow you to grow up in a home with Christian parents and someone else not? Ask those questions. So we ask questions. We welcome questions. The two-year-old who knows how to ask them, do we know how to listen to their questions? Do we know how to listen to their questions and the questions of the teenager? We allow ourselves and children to experiment. My mother-in-law allowed her son to set up his chemistry lab in the basement, and she was left with a black spot on her top of her freezer from his experiments. Some failed experiments. My boys got into trapping, and I had some boundaries for them in trapping. And one of those was that things had to be double bagged and put in my freezer if they didn't have time to skin it out. Another one, well, then that got boring for them, and so then they decided that maybe they could make the lures. And so they were wondering if they could use my blender to grind up mice. And I just said, no, you can get that at a yard sale or a thrift store. So there's boundaries of, and that was not in the kitchen, that was down in the basement too. So we allow ourselves, our children, to experiment and to grow. We encourage creative play. We give space for play. We give space for boredom. Because in those is when they start using their creative mind. And of course, all of these, we give boundaries to them too, because boredom can go places where it's not good. But without that, some of my children learned to make bricks. They wanted to build an igloo or build a brick oven or something like that, and they decided that they would learn to make bricks. And so they worked at making bricks. They didn't make very many of them, and I think they're still piled in the back. But it gave them a chance to do a little exploring, to do a little experimenting. My grandchildren, since the wedding on July 3rd, have been trying to figure out what to do sometimes when they're in my place. And shortly after the wedding, they got into marrying each other. And so they would pick one boy and one girl, and the one would perform the service, and then the other one, that they would walk out and they'd say, announcing Mr. and Mrs. Asher Coons. And they would go walking down, the two-year-old and the six-year-old would go walking down, and then she would go over and she would line them up. She said, okay, now you kneel here and then you stand and put your arm on the shoulder and then she'd take a picture. You know, and it was just fun watching them play. Another time we had children there and the mother said, oh, you just go find something to do. And so they went and found something to do, and later they came and they gave us invitations to their circus. And so we went and they looked, and here they had just a grass, the yard had been mowed real recently, but anyway, they had grass lined out for their stage, and then they just did a little dog performance or, you know, something like that. You know, just use their opportunity, and we were the guests at that. So we ask questions, we welcome questions, we allow ourselves and children to experiment, we encourage creative play, and we make available the tools for learning: art, pencils, crayons, books that stimulate, Lego. Lego is a wonderful tool for encouraging creative play. Oh my, the time has run out, so I will skip the story there because I do want to get to this one. Or the last function, in a home is a place to share, and I have a feeling that when you came into this class, homemaking as a ministry, you figured this is the one I would capture, would stay put on, and it's the one we're going to have less time for. But anyway, we went to one place one time, and as we got there, there was a piece of chocolate on all of our beds, waiting for us, and our children thought this was the coolest place to stay at. And so I give us two words in making our homes a warm place to share. We can do this duty as a Pharisee by just doing it, simply doing it, or we can make our home a warm place to share. Like Cecilia, she went out and picked flowers and put them in a little blue flower pot with the help of her mother and put them in our room, welcoming us to her place. We use two words, anticipation and attentiveness. We anticipate guests, but with flexibility. So have some things in the freezer that are easy to pull out because they might show up when we're not expecting them. The other one is attentiveness, and that is listen to your guests. What does Jesus want to tell you through them? I think of the story of Mary and Martha, and I get so frustrated at Jesus is reprimanding Martha because she's a server. She was out in the kitchen doing what I do. And Mary was just sitting at Jesus' feet. And what I hear in the story is Cynthia, when it's time to say goodbye and your guests are putting on their coats or getting their things together to leave, guess what Cynthia has often found herself doing? Picking up all the toys, trying to clean up after them. And I heard Jesus saying, Cynthia, you're not listening to your guests. You can do that later. Just help them. Stay engaged. What do they need? What is it that I want to say to you through them? That's what Mary was doing. She was listening to her guest. taking the time to listen. That's what I need to do as a hostess, take the time to listen. This lady who had chocolate at the pillows of each of our children's bed and our beds, she had found out that one time before we came to visit that one of our daughter's best friends had just moved to the area. And so she invited that girl to come and spend the night with our daughter. She was listening. And made it available for her to come and spend the time with her friend. What a gift. What a gift to our daughter. Much, much more we could say here. I had a lady show up for supper one night at our house and I had the table all set, full, spread out completely. And there was another lady and her small children showed up. And she wasn't even sure if she should be there or not. And so when she got to the door and I welcomed her with, "Welcome," and she goes, I'm not sure if I should be here. Were you expecting me? And I go, "No, I wasn't, but come on in." And I said it in a way that was not okay. I said it a little worse than that. And my children had heard me fuming and fussing about it when they told me that she was coming, because I was like, "No, I wasn't expecting her. They didn't tell me she was coming. I don't know if I have enough food." Okay. Anyway, she came to the door, and I welcomed her in, as I just told you I did. And then I couldn't find her anywhere, and I went looking for her, and she was in another room crying. And I went to her, and I apologized over and over again. I said, "I am so sorry. This was not okay. I want you here for supper tonight. We will make space for you for supper tonight." But I had already blown it. But anyway, she stayed for supper. And I talked to her every once in a while and continued apologizing. She said, "Cynthia, will you stop it?" She said, "It's just okay. You're taking care of it." But engaging in making our homes a warm place to share gives us an opportunity to be Jesus in person to others. "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware." We get to wait on Jesus as demonstrated through various accounts in Scripture and in the story of Martin the cobbler, if you remember that story. Let the whole earth be filled with the glory of God. So as you and I work at making our homes a safe place to belong, a rich place to grow, a fascinating place to learn, and a warm place to share, we work towards this day with God. This calls for faithful service, commitment, because most days this will be work to keep that goal in front of us, or to even see our daily activity contributing to this work of filling the earth with His glory. We want results now. We want that paycheck now. But I also need to tell you that we're not even guaranteed a paycheck. Because our children, the people that are recipients of our work, still have a choice. And we're not guaranteed that they will love the Lord. That's not our problem. Our problem is to be faithful in the work He has called us to do, to make a place of nurturing love for God. And we let Him do the rest. And it calls for faithful commitment on our part to stay engaged. Don't believe in the lies that your work is not valuable. The opposite is quite true. It is invaluable. Thank you.